Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, editor of Applied Clinical Trials, and I am here today with Dr. Charlotte Grayson, Clinical Research Medical Director at Privia Health. Dr. Grayson is an internist and partner with the First Georgia Physicians Group. And as mentioned just a few seconds ago, Grayson works with Privia Health, managing and overseeing physician clinical trial programs at Privia Medical Group and Privia Quality Network in Georgia. She is also a principal investigator with Javara. Grayson earned her MD in internal medicine from the Boston University School of Medicine and completed her residency at the Medical University of South Carolina. So with that, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Grayson.
Thanks for having me.
Great. So first question, why did you want to become a physician?
So I think my road or my path to becoming a physician was probably a little unusual. A lot of my classmates had grown up wanting to be physicians and had gone to school with the plan to become a physician, but I actually went to college planning to become a chemist. I had the opportunity to apply to an early medical school program. And once I got in and I got a little time up in Boston doing some patient care as a college student in the community centers, I realized what I wanted to do and that I really enjoyed the interaction with patients and the impact that I could make in the community through healthcare. And really, I got into medical school before I knew I wanted to be a physician.
Hey, great. Following on that, can you explain your experiences then getting involved with the clinical trial side of things?
So after medical school and residency, like most physicians, we have lots of options. And I opted to leave the academic setting of my residency and to go into clinical practice in a community setting, mostly because I liked the idea of having those connections with patients in a community that was close to home, where I would know the patients and their families and have a lot of longitudinal care. But I knew that I was going to have to leave the kind of the excitement and the cutting edge feel of being an academic institution. So after about 12 to 13 years of being in clinical practice, we got the opportunity to work with Javara to start launching clinical trials within our practice. Basically, they came and embedded their business in our building, and they brought us clinical trials, and I got the opportunity to train to become an investigator and then to start doing clinical trials.
Can you explain your philosophy around patient enrollment in clinical trials? And I mean, you know, at ACT, we hear about it all the time. It's historically, typically, however you want to say it, one of the hardest factors to consider when it comes to clinical trials.
So going into it, I actually was a little concerned about enrollment, how to do enrollment. My first clinical trial occurred during the pandemic, and it was a COVID treatment trial. And then my second trial was a vaccine trial. And so I was concerned that patients were going to be hesitant, partly because of fear of being experimented on. I was thought that they would not want to participate in a trial during the pandemic. And then with vaccine trials, there had been a lot of press about vaccinations that I thought would scare patients away. But what I found was that when I explained to my patients what the studies were and what the potential benefit would be for them, they were really enthusiastic. We actually had more patients wanting to be in our clinical trials than we were able to enroll in our earlier clinical trials. So I felt like the fact that they knew the physicians who were doing the studies made a difference for them in their trust level when it came to doing a clinical trial. So my philosophy is to explain to the patients what the trial's about, tell them that they may be a candidate for the trial, to kind of give them the opportunities to ask questions, to expose as many patients as possible to the benefits of these trials, and then to just kind of leave it to them, to give them the opportunity to kind of come back to me and to enter trials. And we have been surprisingly successful in enrolling trials out of our practice.
Hey, great. Following that, you kind of touched on about some of the public concerns with, you know, maybe clinical trials during COVID and all that. But as a researcher and an industry insider, what does the general public not understand the most about clinical trials?
From the trials that we have done, I've seen a few issues. You know, certainly I have a large patient base of minority patients, and I have lots of women in my practice. And there have always been questions about patients being concerned about being experimented on. So that's been a huge issue with patients. The other issue has been the questions of time commitment. And then the last thing would be not understanding kind of the phases of the trial and exactly what the patients were to get out of the trial. A lot of the patients didn't realize what a phase three trial was and how much work had been done leading up to the trials that we were offering them. And so I think that led to a lot of misconceptions in regards to feeling like they were being experimented on.
Great. You know, one thing at ACT that Lisa and I have been hearing a lot about is things like empowering the patient and, you know, making them feel more comfortable. You listed off some of those challenges. Just, I'm curious, you know, looking in the future, what do we need to do to make patients more comfortable and address some of those challenges that you just mentioned?
Well, I think the model that we're using to do clinical trials by embedding the trials in my practice is probably one of the best ways to do this. Basically, I have years of experience with these patients. I know their families. They've been seeing me 4, 5, 6 times a year, and they trust me, and they trust what comes out of my mouth, and they trust what I introduce to them. And so the clinical trials that I've brought into my practice that I've, you know, told my patients about and I put them on have been ones that have been ones that they've been very comfortable with because it's coming from someone they trust. So they're not going to a clinical trials center where there are a lot of people they don't know. They're coming to my office, to the research site, which is in my building. I'm the physician conducting the trial along with my partners. And so they trust the process. They know that I have access to their records. I know their history. I know their allergies. And so they tend to trust what we're doing. And so I think that in the future, a model like this, where we're bringing clinical trials into community centers, into places where doctors have established relationships with patients, is going to be one way to really increase enrollment and participation in trials.
Thank you. We've talked a lot about Jivara so far. So speaking of that, what do you think IROs bring to the outsourcing of the clinical trials table?
In our research site, we have some physicians who do research who've had many years of clinical research experience. And then there's researchers who are fairly new to doing clinical research. So working with an IRO can be really helpful in that situation because they bring a lot of expertise on clinical trials. The conducting of a clinical trial is a completely different being than clinical medicine. There's a different language. There's lots of different platforms to learn. There's lots of rules. And then there's those relationships with the pharmaceutical companies and different agencies in order to conduct the trial. A lot of clinical practices have no idea how to do that. But what we do have are we have the clinical expertise and we tend to have the patient populations for these trials. And so having a relationship with a company like Jivara or an IRO really can help us conduct the clinical trial effectively, efficiently, and to get good trials into our practice.
Clinical research as a care option is viable, but it has a couple of barriers. So where/how do you see those barriers kind of coming down?
A lot of what we're doing is education. We are educating patients so that they understand that clinical research is an option for them. For example, we've had a lot of recent interest in obesity trials. The treatment of obesity has been a really hot area in clinical medicine this year. Patients are clamoring for these treatments to help them lose weight, but these treatments are expensive. They're oftentimes not covered by insurance. And so a lot of our patients aren't able to access these treatments. However, through a clinical trial where we're now looking at newer treatments for obesity, I have a whole bunch of patients who are able to get into a clinical trial and to potentially get treatments for obesity that they wouldn't have gotten before. And the best thing about the treatments is that a lot of these trials are including not only treatments, but they're including dietitians, they're including counseling services, they're including recommendations for exercise. So they're actually getting more than what they would have gotten if I had just given them a prescription. So that's one barrier, educating patients that clinical trials are an option. It's something that they can add to their current healthcare management to get to stay healthy or to become healthy. For the physicians on side, we have to educate them as well. We need physicians to understand how the clinical trials can be of benefit to their patient, how it can be an option for their patients. We do a lot of educating of physicians in our practice as well as surrounding practices so that they refer patients into the clinical trials. And then we send information back to them so that they know what's going on with their patient. And then the third arm that we do is a lot of community outreach. So a lot of our trials do recruit in the community. We're doing some trials that are going to require some genetic testing. And so we're reaching out into the community and telling them that there are opportunities for them to enroll in a clinical trial and to learn some more information about their health that may benefit them and prevent them from developing disease. So I think it's a multi-pronged approach. A lot of it is education, but a lot of it is building trust and building on the relationships that we have with our patients, with other physicians, and with the community in order to create a program or a product that our patients and other doctors' patients are interested in participating in.
Hey, great. So far throughout our conversation, you know, we've touched a lot on that patient-physician relationship, but maybe more in detail, how can industry leaders tap into established patient-physician relationships to improve their trial outcomes?
Well, I do think trust is really the bottom line. Physicians in practice, especially those who've been in practices for a long time, have developed these trusting relationships with patients and with their families over a long period of time. And to bring in a clinical trial is another layer. But what we have really learned with our relationship with the IRO, Javara, is that there has to be trust not only between the physician and our patients and their families, but then the physicians also have to trust the IRO. We have to know that the IRO is actually bringing in competent people to run these clinical trials, that they are going to treat our patients well, that they are going to manage all of the relationships that we have built in the community in a trusting way. So it's really a lot of trust. The patients have trust with the physicians, and the physicians have got to trust the clinical trials people who are helping us run the trials to do it in a way where our patients aren't turned away, where they feel like they are being taken care of in an appropriate way.
In your experience, are CROs working with IROs, or are they content to use their own PI networks?
So I suspect that it's probably a little bit of both. I think that using these IROs is kind of a new area in the clinical research space. So I think that a lot of the comfort level is with the established CROs. I think we are a newer entity, and so there has been some reticence in some areas to kind of use PIs like me in the clinical who are out in the community. But it's all about relationships. You know, we got this one trial, you know, several years ago with COVID vaccine. I was able to over-enroll the trial. It got published. You know, the drug is now out on the market. We then did a vaccine trial and we were able to over-enroll that trial. And because patients in our practice like vaccines, and so they entered the vaccine trial. So I think once they opened the door to us and they gave us the opportunity to participate in a trial, and then we showed that we could successfully do it, now I feel like we're getting trials. So, you know, instead of seeing one or two trials every quarter, I now have like five that are starting in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And so I think once we build our track record of doing well and of bringing the kind of diversity that we really need in clinical trials in, that these that the companies are really working with us and they're now realizing what our value is, which is that we are actually able to enroll a lot of patients into clinical trials because we have all of these relationships. But it's going to take some time.
Of course. Well, with that, Dr. Grayson, thank you so much for your time today. This was a great conversation, and it was a lot of fun learning about the IROs and the patient-physician relationships.
Well, thank you for having me. I didn't even know about this podcast, so I'm excited to listen to it all the time now and learn more about clinical research.
All right, great. Well, thank you so much again.
Take care.